Our theme, if you will, for this year is Know What You Believe and Why You Believe It. And we're going to be looking at a number of things that form the basis for our belief system, for our faith, for our Christianity. We looked at one 2 weeks ago, and we're going to look at another one today. We talked about commitment. We talked about dedication and how we want to increase our commitment and dedication to the Lord and to His church. We also want to be able to answer people, talk to people about God, about salvation, about Christ, about heaven and hell. We want to be prepared. And young people, I'll pick on Elijah and Zechariah and others. When I was young, it was very different than it is now. It was very different. I didn't have any friends or people that I really even knew that didn't believe in God. Well, that's not the case anymore, sadly. And so we need to be able to relate to them. We need to be able to talk with them and tell them why we believe that God exists. And you have a bulletin this morning with room on the back to write some things down, and I hope you will. Because the answer to the question, does God exist, affects every other question. I mean, it's the very basis. If there's a supreme being, then life has inherent purpose and some form of meaning. That's Dr. Brad Harab. He works with Apologetics Press and other places. He has a PhD in anatomy and neurobiology from the University of Tennessee. And I agree with him completely. If there is a supreme being, then that affects everything else. Then life now has meaning and it has purpose. There are so many, especially young people, who are going through life without purpose. They don't have any purpose. Their lives don't have any meaning to them. And we see that in the choices they make, the things that they do. We see that over and over again. So we're only going to present four different ways of being able to relate to people, and not just young people, but of any age, because there's so many people that simply don't believe. And even if we're able to just remember one, that will go a long way in helping us to explain to people why we believe. So why would any right-thinking, rational human being believe in the existence of a supreme being? Why would they? Number one, every creation must have a creator. First of all, it's obvious that this universe exists. So the question is, where did it come from? All right? Where did it come from? There are two laws of science, and since people that you're talking to, if they don't believe in God, they probably don't believe in the Bible. So the Bible isn't the best place to go for people who don't even believe in the Bible. So how would you answer that? Well, there's one way to answer it. First of all, the universe is not eternal. It's not eternal. The second law of thermodynamics tells us that. That's a scientific law. And it tells us that the universe cannot be eternal. It's impossible for the universe to have been eternal. Scientific evidence says it has a beginning. It had a beginning. It started at some point in the past. It also could not have created itself from nothing. The first law of thermodynamics says that. It could not have created itself from nothing. So there's two of the three choices. It's not eternal. It didn't create itself. The only other option is it was created. It was created. Well, if it was created, it had to have had a creator. It had to have had a creator, an intelligent creator. some intelligent being, some supreme being, one who was able to bring something into existence from nothing. That's the only option. It's not eternal, didn't create itself. That's the only option. So when you're talking with someone, that's a good place to start. Where did the world come from? Where did the world come from? Well, the scientific laws say it had to have been created. Well, in Romans chapter 1, verse 20, we have a verse that goes right along with this, and then we're going to go back to Psalms 102. But I want us to, and I would write down this verse. I think it's very relevant. Romans chapter 1, verse 20 says this, "For since the creation of the world, His," and the context is God, "God's invisible attributes, His characteristics, are clearly seen." In other words, they are evident. "Being understood," being explained, "by the things that are made," the things that we see in the world. "Even His eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse." So no one can say there just wasn't any reason to believe in God's existence. Yes, there was. There was a lot of reasons. And then second of all, that goes right along with this, the Creator had to have existed forever. Why? Well, if He didn't, or if it didn't, then you would have to explain where the Creator came from. If the Creator hasn't been around forever, then He had to have come into existence at some point. Well, where did He come from? And how did He get here? So therefore, He had to have been around, the Supreme Being, the Creator, had to have been around forever. He could not have came into existence, or you would have the same problem that we already talked about. In Psalms 102, a great passage in the Old Testament, beginning in verse 25 and following of Psalms 102. Verse 25 says, "Of old You laid the foundation of the earth." The context is God. Look at verse 24. "And the heavens are the work of Your hands. They will perish, but You will endure. Yes, they will all grow old like a garment, like a cloak You will change them, and they will be changed, but You are the same, and Your years will have no end." See, God does not have a beginning nor an end. Everything else did have a beginning. The universe had a beginning. You and I had a beginning. All life had a beginning, but not God. He's eternal. So every creation must have a creator. And then point number two goes right along with point number one. Every design must have a designer. Now think about it a minute. When you go to a museum or someplace like that and you see these paintings, what do you know? The paintings had to have been painted. They had to have a painter. Somebody painted that painting. It didn't just magically appear on the wall. The colors didn't just magically come from this palette and was brushed onto the canvas. It didn't just magically happen. A painter had to have done that. A painter designed that. A poem. We all have read poems in school and college and so forth. They were designed by a poet. Regardless of what kind of poem it is, it was designed by a poet. Someone thought about how they were going to put this together, the words they were going to put together, the stanzas, the lines. They designed it. The letters just didn't magically appear on a piece of paper. It was designed. Architecture. Architecture demands an architect. This building right here did not. There was design. Foundation. electrical system going to be like? And on and on and on. Somebody designed that. People didn't go by this one day and it was just a vacant lot, and then they came by 5 minutes later and it was all here. That didn't happen. So when we talk with people who don't believe in God, ask them those type of questions. So what about our universe? Can it be accurately described as designed? Let's just take one thing in the universe, and that's the Earth, the planet we live on. How could chance explain the Earth being in just the right type of galaxy? We are in the Milky Way galaxy. It's a spiral galaxy. And we're in the right type of galaxy at the right location in the galaxy. If we were at a different part of the galaxy, we couldn't exist. But we're in the right kind of galaxy and in the right spot, the right location in that galaxy. What about the odds of being near the right kind of star? There's all kinds of stars in the universe. But we're in the right location by the right kind of star. So right kind of galaxy, right location in the galaxy, right kind of star, right location from that star, the right distance from it. We have the right rotation rate. In other words, we're not rotating too fast or too slow. The Earth is tilted at just the right angle. All right? We wouldn't want to be straight up and down. If we were, the seasons would be too cold and too hot. But we're tilted at just the right angle. We possess just the right amount of water. And we have the right atmospheric conditions. We have primarily nitrogen and oxygen in the atmosphere. If you change the percent of oxygen in the atmosphere by less than 1%, no life on Earth. So when you think about all of those things together, did that happen by chance? Or was it designed? And that's just for starters. I mean, you could just continue to go on and on and on and on and on about all the design in the universe. And it's not apparent design. It's real design. Whether you're talking about plant life, animal life, human life, you just see design and design and design and design over and over and over again. Someone has to be very gullible to believe that happened by accident. When we go to Hebrews chapter 3, verse 4, we'll notice something the Hebrew writer says that's very pertinent to what we're talking about. Hebrews chapter 3, verse 4 says, "For every house is built by someone, but he who built all things is God." What did God do? He designed all things. He designed plant life and bacteria life and viral life, and He designed all of it. He designed the universe. He designed the galaxies and the stars and the solar systems, the planets. He designed Earth. So He designed it all. And when you see something that's designed, you know there is a designer behind it. We turn a few pages back to Colossians chapter 1, verse 16. We see what Paul told the church there. He says, "For by Him," he's talking about the invisible God that we read about in verse 15, "For by Him all things were created that are in heaven and that are on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created through Him and for Him." Again, He created it all. So the only conclusion is that this world was wonderfully made by Jehovah God. It's the only conclusion that makes sense, even from a scientific standpoint. It's the only thing that makes sense. Number three, life must have a life giver. Life must have a life giver. This seems so obvious to us that you would think we wouldn't need to mention it, but every scientist knows that life doesn't just pop into existence. One of the most basic laws of science is called the law of biogenesis. And I know Parker knows what this one is. He's heard it many times in his biology classes. The law of biogenesis. Bio has to do with life, genesis, beginnings. Where did life come from? The law basically states that life comes only from previous life and that of its kind. That's what the law states. I want to read from a well-known evolutionist. His name is Neil Shubin. Says, I can share with you one true law that all of us can agree upon. Okay, now he doesn't believe in creation or God or anything. He's an evolutionist. He's an atheist. But listen to what he said, the admission that he makes. This law is so profound that most of us take it completely for granted. Yet it's the starting point for almost everything we do in paleontology, developmental biology, and genetics. This biological law of everything is that every living thing on the planet had parents. That's in bold print in his quote. Every living thing on this planet had parents. Every person you've ever known has biological parents. That is every bird and salamander or shark you've ever seen. To put it in a more precise form, every living thing sprang from some parental genetic information. All life, he said, comes from previous life and that of its kind. Shark came from a shark. Salamander came from a salamander. Human came from a human. And this is from a staunch evolutionist. But he says, this is like the most basic law you can imagine. Well, the question then is, how did the first living thing come into existence? If life has to come from life, and you keep tracing it back and back and back and back, you come to the first, where did it come from? Well, if you don't believe in God and you believe in evolution, you have no answer for that question. The only possible answer is that it came from a supernatural, creative act of some kind. And then life came from life because life came from God who is living. And that is scientific. Life comes from life. The original life being God Himself, who breathed into Adam the breath of life, and Adam came a living soul. In Acts chapter 17, remember when Paul is in Athens and he gives that great sermon on Mars Hill? Notice what he says in verses 24 and 25. Acts chapter 17, 25. Now remember the context, the situation. Paul is in every kind of possible God you can imagine. They don't know the real God. See, they don't know the real God. They don't know Jehovah God. They know all these other false gods. They just don't know the real one. So Paul is explaining to them who the real God is. Verse 24, God, who made the world and everything in it, since He is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands. See, He's not one of these idols that these people worshipped. Nor is He worshipped with men's hands as though He needed anything, since He, God, gives to all life, breath, and all things. Where did life come from? God. God made the first plants. He made the first animals. Made the first people. All of it came from God. And then the last point. This is the one I could truly talk on for a couple hours. But I know some of you are hungry. This last point is the most telling of all. And that is morality. Demands a moral lawgiver. Where does morality come from? Why do people think that certain acts are right and others wrong? And that's a very good question when you're talking with someone who doesn't believe in God. Ask them if they believe that certain things are right and certain things are wrong. Ask them that question. Why do people believe it's evil, it's wrong to torture a child just for the fun of it? Ask that person if they think that's wrong. Do you think that's wrong? Do you think that's evil? Almost everybody, including atheists, admit that evil and good exist. Another question, ask an unbeliever the following. Would you have a problem if I came to your house and murdered your entire family? Now ask them that question. Now they don't believe in God, okay? Ask them that question. Would that be a problem to you? Would that be a problem? I would imagine everybody would say it was wrong. But you have to come back and ask them, why do you say it's wrong? You say there's no God, okay? So why would it be wrong for me to do that? Well, some people might say, well, it's illegal. But if you go back to the 1940s, Nazi Germany, the Nazis killed some 6 million people. And it was legal. What Nazi Germany did was legal in Germany. The German government made it legal for all of those millions of people to be killed. So it wasn't illegal. And if you read transcripts of the Nuremberg trials after World War II, that's the argument the Nazis made. We didn't do anything illegal, and they didn't. But they were still punished. Why? Because the prosecutors came back. One of the most, I think, important statements for the existence of God there ever was. They came back and said, but there is a higher law than the law in Germany. There's a higher law. That was their term. A higher law. Which meant there was some absolute standard worldwide of right and wrong. So, what is that standard and where did it come from? Did it come from rocks? Do rocks know right from wrong? Well, everybody knows they don't. What about slime? You've seen slime on ponds. Does slime have a moral code? Let's move up. What about bacteria? Viruses, do they have a moral code? What about pigs? Do you ever call a pig immoral? Or an elephant sinful? A lot of animals in the animal world kill their young. Or kill other people or other animals young. Are they sinning when they do that? Is that immoral? Is that evil for them to do that? So why do humans have a moral code and no other living thing have one? For people who don't believe in God, that question is impossible to answer. So this standard that was referred to back in those Nuremberg trials, this standard of right and wrong, this moral code, this higher law, could only have originated from some moral lawgiver. That moral lawgiver we call God. The Bible declares that God is... Remember that great scene in Isaiah chapter 6, verses 3 and 4, where you have the angels flying around the throne of God saying, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord God Almighty." He's also just. He's also righteous. The very existence of these values is evidence that a supreme being exists. The Bible says in Psalms 14:1, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. That's what the Bible calls a fool. There's an abundance of evidence, way, way, way more. that same He will judge the world in righteousness. He is going to judge the world rightly, in the right way. No one will have the power, the ability to say, there just wasn't enough evidence to believe in you. He won't accept it. There's abundant evidence that God exists. And we need to be prepared for that great day of judgment. That was what Paul said at the end of his sermon in Acts 17 on Mars Hill. He's going to judge the world in righteousness by the man whom he's appointed. He's ordained him. And how do we know? By raising him from the dead. Jesus is going to be our great judge. And we're going to be judged. Everybody's going to be judged by the words he has spoken. Are we ready for that great day? Have we repented and been baptized? And if we have we continued to ask God for forgiveness when we do wrong? Those are the pressing questions of the day. So let's think about the words of this invitation song, and if we need to respond to it, let's don't wait. Let's come as we stand and sing.